All right, welcome to the home stretch with Adrian Durant. Tonight we have another special guest, Kim Collins, Olympian from St. Kitts and Nevis. And so a little bit of Kim's resume before we get going. Kim was an NCAA champion in the 60 and the 200 meter indoor. He's been to 5 Olympic Games representing his country, 2003 world champion in 100 meters, becoming the first world championships from St. Kitts and Nevis, and the first athlete to reach even an Olympic final from your country. So just the best to ever do it. Personal best of 6:48 in the 60 meters and 9:93 in the 100 that you actually did at 40 years old, which is crazy. So we're going to get into that because longevity, and that's a big thing in the sport I want to talk about, longevity and having a real career. So the whole purpose of this podcast, I just want to hear the story of amazing athletes like yourself and hear what it takes to get to your level and what you've had to overcome to get there, because I know it's taken a lot. So let's get it going. I'm really excited to hear about it. You know, what got you started in track and field?
Well, I started for the wrong reason. And, you know, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth. But when I was in high school, I realized that, of course, if you're the star athlete, the girls will like you. Now, looking back, yes, you started for the wrong reason, but your focus changed over time. You know, you realize then you can travel as an athlete representing your country. Later on, you realize I can go to school and be a student athlete, being of junior college and Division I NCAA. Then you realize you could take it further, of course, going to the Olympics, the World Championships, and being on the professional circuit in Europe, mainly in Europe, and then, of course, is having financial gain. So although your focus was on one thing at the beginning, as time went on, you realized there's a lot more to the sport than what you thought.
So you said when you first got started, you said a wrong reason. You said the girl. So pretty much when you were a kid, just the popularity and the recognition that you were getting from you were beating everybody, I'm assuming.
Right. But I wasn't at the time, but you realize how people are. Mm-hmm. And for me, of course, if you're in school and you're not the rich kid child, or you're not the bright child, yeah, or you're not the bad boy, you didn't have that image that stood out. So yeah, there was sports. So the star athlete will always stand out, doing well on school grounds, also on sports day when you have the heats or any school competition before you go into like the sports day and the inter-school championships.
Mm-hmm. Was track big when you were growing up?
Huge. I mean, yeah, what it is now here on the island, when I was growing up, if you didn't go early, you couldn't get in. I mean, it has changed dramatically. And I thought it would have been for the better. But back then, the rivalry was great. It was much stronger, more participation, and more crowd support. And people didn't have anything. A lot of persons were running barefoot and grass.
Yeah, did so you guys have a rubber track?
What's that?
No rubber track back then, huh?
No, we didn't got that till 2008. So by the time I became the world champion, we never had a track at the time. And person was still training and competing on grass. So it almost was like we were stuck in time, still competing on grass. But most of the places were well kept. So the grass was not too much uneven that would cause injuries, especially with the ankle, twisting the ankle very easily when the ground is uneven. So we survived a lot. So coming from that, it's amazing that so many of us survived.
It's crazy when you think about it. I was talking to Shara Proctor. I don't know if you know Shara from Anguilla.
Yes.
Long jumper. And we were talking about the same thing, you know, grass tracks, dirt tracks. When I grew up on St. Croix, we had a gravel track over at one of the high schools. And eventually, you know, we did get a rubber track. But it's crazy. People in the U.S. don't think about that. Like most of these places where athletes are being churned out and people are really talented and have all this potential, they don't have a track.
Nope. You use what you have. And those situations really show how much love people have for what they do. Because you really don't have much to work with. You don't have much tools. You don't have much access. You don't have all the fancy gears. But you just have persons who are passionate and love what they do.
Yeah. And so you were, so you started running, I'm thinking this is primary school days.
primary school days, but I didn't compete for the inter-primary school. I've never competed for that in primary school.
Okay.
Well, I didn't do well as I thought, as most persons thought I did in primary school. When I got to high school, junior high, I didn't run in junior high. I did the pre-sports, which is you give your house points. And then, of course, sports day, I didn't run. Quit. Then I went to high school. And, of course, that's when I really got a chance to compete on sports day. And then that was just it. That was all. That was the foot in the door that I needed.
So it picked up for you. It picked up for you in high school. Was track was your primary sport? Did you play any other sports?
In primary school, I played football. I was on never played a game. Yeah, playing at the bench was not part of the team.
Yeah,
we tried to do cricket, but they always put me to field. I never touched the bat, so I had to find something where I had to find a way to excel, because when you're dealing with team sports, you can always get pushed in the back.
Yeah.
It's very easy to get pushed in the back if you're on a team sport. The coach don't like you, he's going to put you on the bench. You said something stupid, he's going to put you on the bench. Mm-hmm. But the second team, as an individual sport, each individual represents themselves.
Absolutely.
So you come out on 100 or long jump, whatever your event is, and you win, and you make it clear that I'm the winner. Nobody can change that. And, you know, that is why some persons don't like individual sports, because mommy and daddy can't save you.
All the pressure is on you. It's all on you.
You know, in team sports, mommy and daddy can, you know, grease your way to the team. But
That's true.
The situation, if the club doesn't say what we wanted to say, you're not going to make it. And if you don't jump that distance, or you don't jump high enough, you don't make it. And they can't reach the pole, or they can't reach the sand pit, they can't reach the clock. So it's all on you and your ability. That's all it takes. It doesn't take bribery.
Well, that's a beautiful thing about the sport. It's not subjective. You know, you can't. It's the time on the clock, and it is what it is, and you can't lie against the clock. So.
No, don't get me wrong. The times I've argued against the clock. The times I'm in the race and I'm like, what happened? What happened? Who's timing? Who was judging today?
Who win the argument?
Man, sometimes you're out there and you come eighth or sixth and you think you got second.
Yeah.
What happened? But I was second. I was right there. What happened? You're like, nope. You came eighth. You came sixth.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the reality of the sport.
Yeah.
You just want to always make sure you give it your best. And that's what your best was. That's all. You just want to give it your best. That's all.
Yeah. When you were in high school, was the main event for you the 100 back then?
No, I did everything, man. I did 100.
Everything.
100, long jump, steeplechase, everything.
Steeplechase.
Barefoot. Could not walk for days. I was steeplechase. You had to run up the mountain somewhere and back.
Up the mountain. Yeah, this sounds like some island training.
So it was up the mountain. It was more like cross country.
Yep.
And I did that barefoot 1 year, and I could not walk for days.
Yeah. People think I'm joking when I tell them when I was 12, I used to train in the rainforest back on St. Croix. I'm like, hey, man, when you grow up in the Caribbean.
Yeah, man. Island life.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then, not to say anything about my age, but you didn't have shoes in abundance like how some kids have it now.
Yeah.
So you mess that one pair of shoes up. Mommy's like, okay, cool, no problem. But you're still going to school.
Yeah.
And you're going to wear one good shoe or no shoe, but you're not staying home. So those days, parents were like, hey, man, I paid a lot of money for that shoe and you're going to wear it and it's not time for a new one. So you're going to go to school without shoe.
Man, that's a different world from a lot of what these kids know, man. That sounds, you know, right now is a lot of privilege when people can't really fathom what you're saying when you mean one good pair of shoes. And if you mess that up, it's a wrap.
Yeah, you got to wait till next September.
I know
things have changed. A lot of persons now have become more accessible with things.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to spoil the child and make them handicapped. When I say handicapped, they won't be able to fend for themselves in the real world. because it's, again, mom and dad is going to always be there.
So you're right.
People with that as a field.
You're right. And not only that, man, people need a chip on their shoulder a lot of times when they need that thing to push them. I was talking to a coach. He was coaching out in one of those countries, you know, Saudi Arabia or something. And he's a national team coach and he's having a hard time because it's too comfortable for the athletes. There's no hunger to be good. They wake up, everything's paid for. They come to practice. So, you know, if you're telling a kid like that to train, to run 44, and you know what it takes, the kind of pain you have to go through, you can't make someone go through that who doesn't have that hunger, who really has it inside of them. And so maybe that's another reason why folks from the Caribbean, you know, they perform at this level, because a lot of them are coming out of these poverty and different situations. It's like, look, I'm trying to run and get this contract and get out here and make something for myself, my family. This is a path and I'm going to do it. And, you know, they're able to train on dirt. It don't matter. Dirt, grass, world champion training on grass, you know?
Right. But then the thing is, again, do they love what they do? Or are they just doing it just to pass time because we have nothing else to do, or we have to do something, or the state says we have to do sports? A lot of persons don't understand how much it is when you love the sport.
So I have a question. I'm curious. Is that love created because of the fact that you've invested in it, you've done it, and you've seen that you could be good at it, so you build confidence and self-esteem, and it's like, you know what, I like doing this, and then you develop a passion for it because you're good at it, you see that you could get better, and you see that the work and effort that you put in actually gets you somewhere. You think that can contribute to why, you know, that love?
Well, in all what I call simple English. Simple English, you know, not to complicate anything. Me, when I get on the track, the adrenaline rush that we're going to race, that was everything for me, man. I mean, you step on the track, it's like you're going to bust some heads today because last time, yeah. I mean, that rush that I got on the track was all I needed.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that is, when you're in the moment, that's what it's all about. And that's what the core of it was, man. I just want to beat everyone else.
and you, it's not that you were not happy to be there, because you were. But the focus was not, oh, I'm happy to be here, I'm happy to race these guys. No. You're happy to compete. Yes. Yeah. Cannot make it seem like you're just happy that these people are around you. Why I say that too many people have lost because they're happy. And when I say they're happy because, oh, I am happy because I'm racing George, and I'm happy because I'm racing this person.
Yeah.
And you forget that you're not really just racing, but you're competing.
Yeah, yeah.
Competition is going to be a winner. You need a winner. So if you're just happy to be there, you lose sight of why you're there. A lot of people, it might sound, but some people may get it, some people may get it later, but you have to not forget, why am I here? I'm here to compete.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you were in high school and you started picking it up and you were doing all the events, when did you see a path to the U.S. and to college? Because I don't know how recruiting, I know how recruiting is now. I don't know how was it common back then, you know, when you were being recruited, were a lot of the U.S. schools coming to the Caribbean then?
Oh, no.
That's, yeah.
The main part for us islanders was the Caribbean Games. Caribbean Free Trade Agreement came together and they had this track meet every year in the spirit of Caribbean working together and building each other. Most persons would have gotten scholarship from winning or doing well. You know, sometimes the coaches, they come and they see someone who may not have won, but say, I can work with that guy, I can work with that girl. Yeah, this jumper, I see how I can fix or tweak that. And that was really, and still is, one of the main places of times where us islanders get a chance to come to school in the US. I did hear about it. Did I think it was possible for me? No, I did not. I was able to get a scholarship to go to a junior college, Central Arizona College in Coolidge, Arizona, before going on to TCU. So it was not something that I thought was possible or I saw in the past, because there's very few people from, especially my island, that have had that opportunity before me.
So you did well at Charifta. And I always talk about Charifta with some of the people who I've interviewed. You know, that's if you're in the Caribbean and you're 19 and under and 17, and I have a Charifta medal, you know, like Charifta was the meet.
Yeah, I have a bronze.
I have a bronze.
Cayman Islands, 1995. Yeah, I know, right?
Man, I always talk about it as my claim to fame because I got a bronze in a 200 and Bolt was in the race. So I was like, man, you know, what do you what do you want?
I know, but my first year I went, I came fourth in my heat.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell this story because when I came back, you know, my friends asked me, boy, I heard you traveled and you went to a heat. And like, how did you do? I say, well, I came fourth. And it was like, man, it's great. You came fourth the first time. So a friend of mine was like, so how many people was in the race? Like, four. So you did not come fourth. You came last.
Yeah, last.
So, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt. It's not an embarrassment. It's the sole truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. You came fourth. But the reality was four people running. So you have to be strong enough to build on that and want to do better than let that destroy your ego.
Mm-hmm. Now, what was your JUCO experience like? Because I always hear, I have a lot of friends who went through JUCO when I went to South Carolina, and they always tell, they're like, oh man, we were living on sardines and, you know.
Dude, listen, that was a very tough period. I mean, you're talking about me going to college on my own with $5 in the pocket.
When
I don't mean 25. I mean
$5. And which school did you say you went to again for your junior college?
Arizona.
So you moved from St. Kitts to Arizona.
Desert.
Exactly.
Desert land, get up to 115 in the summer sometimes. And yes, ramen noodle was it, man. You got ramen noodles, you got chicken. I traded two beef for one chicken. It was like that. It was tough. And it was an amazing experience. Because as crazy as it sounds, that was the first time I really man up to tell my mother that I love her. In the islands, especially us black people, don't really say L word. To our mother, we say to every skirt we want to chase. We're not gonna say it to your mother. So yeah, I really learned a lot, and it was an experience. And now I try to make sure that you understand what life is about. That really taught me a lot. It definitely was wrong. And moving from there to TCU now, where full scholarship was full scholarship, and you get the scholarship check every month. You can have your own apartment. I think that helped me to even perform better, putting me at ease, you know, where you can eat regular, have better food, cook your own food, whatever it was, you were better off. And I think it's something that persons need to understand. How can you have a better situation for better performance?
Yeah.
Because some people don't necessarily want to better their situation.
Yeah,
they can, but they don't always want to. They want to make sure they try to hold on and stuff, and they want to do things. If you have a better situation, it makes a lot better for your performance. Everything comes into play, whether it's finances, your love life, your partner, your training partners, your coach. All of these things plays a part in your development and your performance as an athlete. It's very important.
Absolutely. And I definitely want to talk about your experience at TCU, because I know some great things happened there. And actually, you know, for me, I moved to New Jersey from St. Croix for opportunity in track and field. I was sent there. And one of my first experiences when I moved there for high school. And so ninth grade, I went to my first Penn Relays. Mm-hmm. And at my first Penn Relays, I seen y'all, TCU, run 119.6. And it was crazy in the 4x2. The 4x2. That was one of my first experiences. Penn Relays, I'm seeing all the college athletes, all the pro athletes. And I'm like, wow, this is what track and field really is. and you guys go out there and run faster than the pro team.
Yeah, we wanted to race them, but
man, that was crazy.
Yes, but the energy in the stadium, the energy in the stadium is alone is enough.
119.6.
Yeah, we were ready that day, and we had some great performances. We had an amazing team.
Oof.
I mean, we did have some slip-ups in 2000 Duke University where we didn't finish the 4x1. We were undefeated until that day. We also had problems where indoors, 2001, we lost by 1 point.
Oof.
No, you don't understand. We were cheering for the other teams because we needed
to beat the
we needed Baylor to win. We needed LSU to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And that boy Francie came down that last 15 to 4x4. I'm like, stop, man.
Aileen Francie, that's right.
And then, man, and then we came outdoors same year in Oregon and lost again. NCAA championship by 1 point twice in the same year. This is the stuff you see in the movies.
Yeah.
I mean, that hurts. But then I was also able to move on to win my first world championship medal outdoors in the 200, although a false start in 2001 in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm.
Lane one, run 2020 out of lane one.
Yep.
You know, so sometimes, yes, you get knocked down, but you got to get up. Because if you get up and fight, that's the only time you will know what else is out there for you. You can't be, you came all this way to get knocked down. You got to get up and fight because something else is out there. And, you know, the reality is sometimes you hear people tell you these things and you're like, no, I don't want to hear that. But trust me, boss, there's more out there. You got to take the good with the bad. Otherwise, sports ain't for you. And also, it's just a part of life.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Man, yeah, no, you guys were, that was a big experience for me. And you said you guys were undefeated in the 4x1 most of the year. I mean, you guys were competing at a high level. That was a high level.
Well, it was a high level team. And one of the things I explained to people is that when I was leaving junior college, I mean, I could have gone anywhere. You know, I was running 10-1, 20 point something. I'm old now, so. But when I visited TCU, the difference was they had Davis Patton there, who beat me.
Yeah, yeah.
Carter Flash Williams, who beat me. And Lynn Del Prieto, who beat me. So I came here, and I'm like, yeah, this is the place I want to be. This is where I want to be. Because I could have gone to another school where I would have been a giant amongst dwarfs. And I wasn't going to take the easy way out.
And this is why you're a world champion, because you went where it was hard. You went where steel sharp as steel. You put yourself around some steel.
Yeah, because I know not that they could. I know that they have beaten me.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not that, oh, he maybe, no, he did beat me. Yes. Yep. And you have to understand, you can go and be lazy, or you can go and work. And when you work, you get paid.
Yeah. So what was the transition like? Because I always ask pros about this because, you know, most people have a difficult time. I'm curious about that transition from college to the pro days. Because you were still training. You were training at TCU. So then it's like it's a decision of, first of all, where do you go, right? Do you stay? Do you go? How does that work out?
Well, the transition wasn't so much a transition. Let me explain, because I was going to the World Championship since 1995.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking 2000, 2001 now. So I was exposed to high-level competition and high-level persons that you see on TV. So I was already immune, you know. I was already conditioned to seeing as far back as guys like, you know, Maurice Green, Donovan Bailey, all those guys.
Yeah.
My gosh, you get what's his name? John Regis, Linford Christie. He was all those guys all the way up to Coleman and Brummel. You know, and both in the middle.
Yeah.
In Gatlin for years. So the transition wasn't a competitive transition, because you were training and competing with high level people all your career. And it's very important for persons to try that, to be desensitized, because you don't want to get to the competition and you see some guy you've been following on Instagram and all of a sudden you start struggling. And again, you're happy that you're meeting this person that you see on Instagram, but you're here to compete. And people lose sight of that. And all I'm saying to them, you cannot be a fan and an athlete at the same time. You got to choose a side.
Yeah.
You choose a side. There are some fans who want to compete, and I understand that. But if you say you come to compete, you cannot come with that mentality that I'm just happy to race this guy and this guy. No. Not in sprinting. Try that for something else.
No. Yeah, you're going to get smoked, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Before you get to the track, you lost.
Yeah.
A lot of races are lost long before we get to the track.
Hey, well, I ain't going to act like it hasn't happened to me, because I've gone head-to-head with you a few times. And for me, that was, you know, like I said, I came to high school in ninth grade and watched you guys break the record. And then when I'm in college, you know, I got to compete against you at the CAC championships, you know, at a couple world championships. So it was like, man, it was crazy for me finally getting to that point where I could be in that race, you know. It's crazy.
But you got to be in that race with the mentality that I'm here to take over.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, people talk about, everyone does, but sometimes they do because you just kick it down, man.
Yeah.
Somebody just kick the door down. Yeah, it's like, no, this is where I need to be. Don't tell me about another door. I've seen what's going on in here. This is where I need to be. This is where I want to be.
Well, one thing about you I noticed, and I know you do a lot of work with the team now, and I've seen you kind of mentor those guys. You always kind of were like that, even with the group of guys in my generation and coming up. You were always kind of like positive and encouraging and be like, man, don't worry about this. Just go out there and do this, you know, when people overthinking. And so you always, to me, was a mentor in that sense. And I've seen the work you've done with the current team, and I've seen a lot of progress and success from those guys too.
Well, we all need some directions and some guidance. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people don't know what they're good at. They don't know their strength. They don't know what's inside of them. And there's so many ways to get it out of you. Sometimes you get angry. Sometimes you have to get mad. Sometimes you have to get tired. You got to get tired of losing, tired of disappointment, tired of walking a home without that medal that you know you work hard for.
Yeah,
you got to let people know, man, listen, all of us going to be tired.
Yeah.
All of us going to feel pain. All of us going to get injured. Because we are all humans. The guy who wins is not necessarily bigger, faster, or stronger, but he's just the guy who refuses to give up.
Yeah.
You've got to say, hey, I'm here to race. Let's race.
Yeah.
And then if you're on the circuit, you know, a day or two later, there's another race. So there's so much to work on. There's so many times you can change. There's so many things you can do. You can't think it's over because you're going to have another shot. You have another shot. So you have to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, I made a mistake here. Let me correct this. And each time you go, you correct mistakes one at a time. Don't try to correct too much. And I try to make them understand when you're competing, especially, you want to race and you say, I don't know what happened. I'm good with that. But if you tell me, okay, I was in the race and at 60 meters, this happened, and at 70, this, and then, no. If you know too much.
Yeah.
You know too much.
Yeah.
If you tell me you don't know what happened, fine. Because it means you're blanked out. But if you can tell me everything that happened, blow by blow commentary in a race that you ran, you were not paying attention. Because you're watching everybody else and you didn't do nothing right. You didn't know nothing. But you're just watching, okay, he's over here and he's over there. Focus.
Yeah. We got to talk about that 2003 World Championship, because that one was exciting, because I just remember a huge contingent from the Caribbean there. And when you and Daryl both medaled. It was like, oh man, it was crazy because you won it and Daryl got what? He got silver. What did he get, silver or bronze? Silver.
Silver.
He got silver. So you guys went 1-2. It was a Caribbean 1-2 punch. Mm-hmm. And that hadn't happened before that.
No, well, that was the best represented world championship, men's final world championship ever. Yes, the Caribbean went 1-2.
Oof.
Great Britain representing Europe went 3-4.
Yeah.
America went 5-6. And Africa went 7-8.
Yeah.
Well, Oceania was missing, but, you know, it was Caribbean, Great Britain, America, Africa.
Tell me about that experience. That had to be, I mean, that experience, that was a big deal for the Caribbean folks.
Yes, because it was the first one for the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the first man from the Caribbean to do that. Before, it was always USA, Canada, Great Britain. No, the thing was, it was open. Anybody could have done it. John Drummond thought he was going to do it. That's when he lay down on the track forever.
Yeah.
We can never forget that part.
I remember that, man. Didn't he jump in the steeplechase?
Yeah, I was the lady after, so I'm there getting cold. And
he acted a fool, man.
He did. He didn't move. I experienced that later on in my life as well, where that was in Paris. They said I found that, and yeah, that's the first time in my life that I didn't know. You know, sometimes we know, like, what did they got me? Did they get me today? But that was the first time in my life I did find that and did not know it. Mm-hmm. So I do believe that it's a possibility and it's a trend that's been happening. Remember, Nicole Ashmead went through the same thing. So it happens. And, you know, with that waist, there's so much. Every time I think about it, I remember different things.
Mm.
Because, I mean, it was an amazing time. And I see the possibility, and I took advantage of it. And I'm telling you, it's amazing. I don't know. To this day, I still don't know how to feel about that. Because it's something that you live for and you dream for. And your work plan, it actually happened. Even though as much as you want it, you still don't know what's going to happen. You still don't know. It can go anywhere. There's 8-man lineup. Anyone can take it.
I remember it. It was exciting. You guys went 1-2. And I remember after it too, because it was a celebration. Because everyone from the Caribbean was like, ah!
Yeah, I mean, we had a table. We had a table back in the village, man. And
hey.
Yeah.
I remember. I remember clearly.
But you know, that's the thing. We come to compete. We're competing. And at the end of the day, we should be able to just accept the results. You're going to have a winner and a loser and move on.
Yeah.
That's all it is. Yeah, World Championships next 2 years, Olympics next 4 years. You know the deal. Come back, try again if you wish. That's
all. Yeah. Now, yeah, that was, I'll never forget that experience. So another thing, man, we were talking about longevity earlier. I mentioned it earlier because, as we mentioned, even with that World Championship, that's not when you hit your personal best in 100. Your personal best didn't happen until you were 40 years old, which is, I mean, that's not typical in our sport.
It's not.
You had a very long career and you ran very fast for a very long time. And you were always competitive, always in finals, always, you know, in the mix. And it was like, what do you attribute to that type of longevity? Because it's not normal. Some folks have long careers, but.
It's not normal, but it can be.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, the ego. You got to control your ego. A lot of athletes that come, they have a coach and they want to do what they want to do. It doesn't necessarily work that way. If you trust me as a coach, if I trust my coach, you understand this is what we're trying to work towards, two of us together. Because if you don't make it, the coach don't make it. That's how it is. People come out and they want to race every day. I see it all the time. First, they're training in spikes, want to race.
Crazy.
But I'm trying to explain to them, you have to learn to race. And people get offended. Everything you're doing now, you have to learn to do. You have to learn to walk. You have to learn to talk. Remember, there was a time when you couldn't feed yourself. You had to learn to feed yourself. Your mother had to give you the spoon and hold it and you say, no, feed yourself. Okay? You have to learn to write. Everything we had to learn. But the thing that's going to make you into what it is you want to be, you don't want to learn to do. You just want to do. And it's a pattern that I've seen so many times over and over. And it's ridiculous because all I'm saying, you have to learn. You have to learn. Here's the thing. You come to training, whatever your event is, you must get fit first. They don't want to get fit. They don't want to do no tempo work. They just want to run fast. And it's very annoying because I've trained with some guys sometimes and they want to race me in training. And I keep explaining, that's not how it works. It's a well, you have to be competitive, I understand, but you don't learn anything if you race it every day. It's not possible. So they come again, they race. And before you know it, they're injured. Because like a vehicle, most vehicles, they have that rev meter. And they tell you, once you put the rev line up in the red, that's engine damage. Now, that is a sprinter that is in the red line every day as a vehicle. You're going to have engine damage. Okay? You're going to blow a tire. Whatever it is, car parts, I'm not a car specialist, but I know enough to know that once you overwork that engine, you're going to have problems. And they don't want to listen. So they keep doing it year after year after year, and wondering, why am I not being successful? Just recently, a young man contacted me. He said he won 10 times 100 with like 2 seconds left. I'm like, whoa. Like, explain to him why he should not do that. And then I got 20 times 100 all out. I'm like, dude, you do that in one day. That is a whole season for me.
20, that's 2,000 meters of just sprinting.
Right. But they don't understand volume and intensity. It can't be the same.
Yeah, it can't be.
Okay, you can't have high volume and high intensity, which is 2100 all out.
No.
And you can't be doing 2100 at like 10, at like 20 seconds. That really, you have to have a balance.
Yeah.
So when I explain it to them, if you're going to do all out, you can't go past 3. They don't think that's enough.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, so I'll ask them, so how fast do you run? And that explains everything because obviously my point is what you're doing is not working.
Yeah.
It's not working. So they don't want to do what it takes. They want to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
And that creates a big problem because you as a coach trying to direct them and they say, no, I don't want to do that. This is what I want to do. And I say, okay, fine, just leave me alone. Because my part of my longevity, yes, was warming up properly, doing your workout, cooling down, following the time that the coach asks for, which is very important. The person, you tell them to run a certain time, they're going to run faster, deliberately. But when time comes to run fast, they're done because they have left everything in the training. I will explain to them, that's not how it goes. They don't want to hear that. But later on, you know, my wife came on as coach and a lot of persons were thinking that, oh, she's not really a coach. He's actually coaching himself. Everyone knows in this sport, nobody can coach themselves. Many have tried, all have failed. But my wife is a certified trainer and a certified coach. But I know how to control my ego. I know if the coach say you're not doing it right, your arms or legs were not the way it's supposed to be. I know how to control my ego and get it done. Most people get upset because, oh, you know, I'm mumbling. And they don't understand. We're trying to teach you. We all had to give a driver's license and we had to do what the instructor said. For us in the islands, we go with the police to watch you drive and make sure you do everything correct. And we do that. Now, when you get the license, you drive like a madman. but you will never get the license driving like a madman. You'll get the driver's license following orders. And that's what people don't want to do. So I was able to have my wife as coach follow the direction. And one of the good things about it was because husband and wife, we're in the bed. So she knows if I'm not sleeping, she knows if I'm stressed, if I'm tired, and we adjust that. When I'm coaching athletes every morning, how do you feel? I'm not in the bed with you. How do you feel? I need to know if you slept, if you have pain, I need to know, because if you can't do the workout and I don't know you're feeling pain, it makes me look bad.
And you have to drag it out of them half the time. They don't want to even tell you. You know, they don't want to tell you they only slept 4 hours.
That's fine.
And I'm like, I need to know this.
Yeah, we're gonna tailor the training to say, okay, we're gonna listen. There's some extremists who think that, you know, if the program says blocks today, it could be thunderstorm. It could be a thunderstorm. We're gonna do blocks.
I hate that. Listen, Go ahead.
I know they don't listen. Knowledge requires wisdom. Okay, so when you try to spit some knowledge to people who don't have no wisdom, I try to give some wisdom to people who don't have knowledge, you're gonna fight an uphill battle. And all you're trying to say, how do you want me to explain it? It's simple. You have to take a break, you have to take a day off. Some people don't like that. And those extremists will never make it. There's a lot of athletes out there training like a madman and will never make it. If you see them train, you'll bet the house on them and lose.
I've seen folks train like that. You're like, man, it's crazy.
It's still like
man,
this.
Look, real talk. Rio 2016, I'm there with Bruno running for Spain. So he ended up running 2004 there, and he ended up 10th overall. And I'm looking at these cats, man, in the Olympic, you know, we in the Olympic Village. And so we go into the track, he running a couple days, real easy. You know, we do some shorts, he do a couple starts, we do some visualization, feeling good, some quick stuff in the weight room, time to compete. Man, folks was out there a couple days before the 200, flat out, 31 flat, 300. I'm like, yo. Right. And you know what? Ain't not wanting to make it out the first round.
Well, if they did, maybe we're not drinking from the same water pipe.
it don't make any sense.
No, well, again.
One kid hurt himself. Didn't one kid hurt himself? 19-6 kid from St. Vincent or one of them last Olympics?
There's a kid. One of those. Somebody came
from hurt himself on the practice track.
Yeah. Oh, Antigua.
And he ran 19-6?
Yeah, he was Antigua. Miguel, he's yeah. But the thing is, you got to know yourself. And if you're not honest with yourself, you can't be honest with nobody else. You've seen this. And when you're trying to tell these young people, it doesn't work that way. They're like, nah. So a lot of you started watching me on TV, and the career ended with them watching me on TV.
Yeah. I seen you one time, man. You threw me off. It was Grenada. I remember this. It was Grenada. It was like CAC champs or one of those meets, man. And I was running well, man. And I watched you. And everyone was warming up for the 100. You were chilling, sitting down, relaxing. I'm like, yo, he not going to warm up? Everyone warming up hard in the sun. Ha, drills. You're relaxing. I saw you get up. Last call for the 100. I saw you get up. I saw you do one acceleration like this, right? Jump in the blocks, smoke everybody, make it. I'm like, yo, man, it was just crazy because you were just comfortable. You were like, I'm good.
Confidence, man. The confidence.
We were all tripping, man. We doing hurdle hops. You know, we out there sweating bullets, man. You like, I'm good, man.
Listen, man, it's an amazing sport. It can be good to you, but it also can be bad to you.
Oh, yeah.
It all depends on how you perceive things. Number one thing I try to explain to people all the time, Superman was not super all the time. Superman, you know, was Clark Kent, a reporter. Okay? Only when something happened, he always find a phone booth. I think he had like Google Maps and like, find me a phone booth.
Yeah.
He went in a gym. So, you come out every day, train. You get injured. You don't treat that injury, to come out, whatever. I had to listen to my body. That same CAC, I got hurt and I couldn't win the 200. I would have been the third person to win the double at a CAC, 100 and 200, same time, with Obadeli and Donald Corey. So a lot of times I know, yes, you may be out there, you're feeling pain and you feel you can work through it, fine, but it's not a continuous thing. You gotta get the treatment. So I tried my best to take care of my body. I eat what I can. What I don't eat is what I can't eat. So, you know, I do what I can. But most persons, they try to be so meticulous and they try to do this and it messes everything up. You cannot, this world is not perfect. You cannot live perfect in an imperfect world. It doesn't make sense. The days when back then, the days when my wife know we're not training today, we just chill. The crazy thing is, let me let you, well, now that I'm retired, I'll tell you this. Every summer, I will go to Amsterdam from 2001 up until like 2013, something like that. From 2001, 2002, and 2003, I would be in Amsterdam by myself. No coach, no manager, nobody. You know what? I train when I feel like training. Okay? Reason being, I have to listen to the weatherman. The weatherman says it's going to rain at 6 o'clock this evening or 4 o'clock in the morning, whenever you work your training time around. Okay? The days when I didn't feel like it, fine. But again, back to the thunderstorm. It's a thunderstorm. It's raining. You don't have to go to the door. Maybe the rain might stop later on. Or maybe the rain started later on in the day. So it's for you to understand, okay, let me see how can I work my day. Let me see how I can make things better. Make use of my time. But some people are so rigid, they don't stop and think that, okay, it's going to rain. Or we're going to have it. So maybe I should. They don't do that. They want to stick to that same plan. And not realizing that Mother Nature has their own plan.
Crazy. No, the longer you're in the sport, I think you have to realize you need to be flexible. I think anyone that's sticking to some rigid plan at this point is crazy.
And rigid for you?
You know, like, oh, we didn't do this workout yesterday. We have to make up that workout. Nah, that workout's done, man.
We don't roll over workout.
No way. Yeah.
One company, they stop roll over minutes.
It don't make any sense. We got to see where you're at today. That's right. A whole different. And if we couldn't do the workout yesterday, it was a reason for it. So now we got to look at it again today. And once again, I'm always asking those questions, you know, how you feel. Scale of 1 to 10. Now be more specific because, you know, they won't tell you anything at first.
What type of pain is it? What type of pain is it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Honest.
It kind of hurts really bad when I step, but you know, I could get through the workout. Like, what? They come on, man. Oh, I didn't sleep last night, coach. You know, I was doing a project. I slept 1 hour, but I'm okay. You're not okay.
Nah.
You're not okay.
what I get sometimes is, you know, going to really well. It's okay, cool, no problem. You can do a recovery workout. Then they hear we're doing some speed walk or blocks. Oh, I'm okay.
The worst. You know what? I'm going to cut this clip and I'm going to post it for my athletes. Because they'll be like, okay, how you feel today? We're doing 10s, 20s, 30s. Hey, I'm ready to go, coach. Let's go. All right. Today is a 300 or 250. You know, they're like, oh, coach, my hip is a little tight. I'm sore.
What happened was... People need to understand. And now that I'm on the coaching side, I explain to them the number one thing I explain to them, this is your dream. It's not mine.
Thank you.
And I love a good cartoon. I really do. I mean, especially having kids. And I watched this cartoon Rango, and one of the moral was a hero can never walk out on his own story. So if you walk out on your life, your story will never be told. You will never achieve what is out there for you. That's it. So you can go ahead and see what is out there, or you can quit. But your quitting would not be my fault.
can't want it more than them. It's up to them. And I often talk about that, man. And that's any goal you have. Because I'm like, look, it's easy in sports to blame the coach. It's easy to say, I didn't win because of coach. But at the end of the day, you didn't win. So it's on you. A lot of times it's like, oh, you know, coach, he set me up for this, or coach didn't get me prepared the right way. I'm like, look, man, at the end of the day, it's your career. I'm here to help you, facilitate this thing for you. And I'm willing to do everything I can in my power and my knowledge to help you and work with you. And we work together to get you your goal. But at the end of the day, it's your goal. I went after my goals and I'm good on that. Like, it's your goal.
Exactly. And I say the same thing, dude. I've done a new time.
Yeah, you got world champion already. You're like, look, I don't want
to. Whatever you know. It's hard because what I explain to them is that love conquers all. This is a terrible example, but there are people who actually love to steal. Mm. They're good at stealing. Whether you're in your house, you're in your car, inside, or whatever it is, they love stealing. There are people who love to lie.
Yeah.
They will tell you some lies, and you'll be like, what?
No reason. Why are you lying?
No reason. When you lie for, they love it and they think they're good at it. No, because again, the adrenaline rush they get from telling you a lie. The adrenaline rush that a thief get from coming in your house when you're in there and taking your stuff. Or you'll be standing and waiting for the boss and a thief will come and put his hands in your pocket and take your wallet and you don't even know.
Yeah.
The adrenaline rush that they get, because, and they love that. So I'm saying to the people, if you love the sport, you don't need to know the history of the sport. You don't need to tell me in 1996 Olympics, men's 100 semifinal two, what was the win this? Nobody cares. Nobody knows. I don't even know who won that race. Okay? But there are a lot of athletes who fill their brain with what we call useless information. And when I try to explain to them it doesn't work that way, they get offended. All I'm saying, if you're going to get there, know how you're going to get there. Know what you need to do, what you're not doing, what you're doing too much. It's your journey. Usain Bolt has run his race. And I don't think, I think I can say this. Usain Bolt, mom and dad have another child, and it's not like Usain Bolt. So you're not going to be like Usain Bolt. Move on from that. And when I see people trying to add me on Facebook and your name is some other dude's name and he's not your father and you're not married to him, I don't add you.
That's strange.
No. The only way to have a dude's name is if you're married to him or he's your father.
Yeah.
No other exception. So when you're telling me you want to be this dude, you need, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
No, you need to change from that, because you need to be you. I'm Kim Collins. My mother gave me that name. I'm gonna stray away from that.
Yes, so sir.
If you want to be somebody else, you need to check yourself.
Yes, sir.
Most of all, that's disrespect to your parents who gave you that name, who gave you life. And he said, "Mommy, I don't want to be Kim Collins. I want to be Tom Jones."
Yeah, that's strange.
Disrespect to your parents.
That's strange.
Forget you on this one. That's disrespect to your parents, man. So you try to get them to, first of all, love yourself.
Love yourself.
Yeah. And just, you have to respect the sport. There's a lot of athletes come and don't respect the sport, and I just laugh. I know very shortly, they will be forgotten.
And that's the thing. So many people have run a fast time. You don't know who they are. You've never heard their name. It takes a little more than that to be remembered in this sport.
Oh, yeah. Before you learn the name, they retire.
Yeah. You don't even know who they were. Now, what? So you're a busy person. You're hard to track down now that you're coaching.
Yeah.
When I say hard to track down, listen. So you're coaching, but what else have you been spending your time doing?
Well, my wife and I started the King Collins Foundation. And it's part of what we do in the coaching, where we try to do what we know is best for the athletes. But they don't necessarily know. And I'm telling you, it's a great thing because, of course, you operate independently. So we don't operate under the government or the federation. So it gives us the opportunity to do what is right and have the right connections. And, of course, we had athletes we sent to Europe. before the pandemic, of course. And, you know, I've been along standing with our leaders. They came on board, they had the athletes with this, but you know, the islands, how shoes can be expensive. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because when you buy it in America, ship it here, you got to buy it again.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, now, you know, I have a kid that, you know, I make sure that they go to school, they do their homework, make sure they're on the up and up.
Yeah.
You know, in the gym also, my wife and I, we work together in the gym. We train some other persons who, you know, sometimes persons want to lose some weight, they're getting married or, you know, little things, nothing long term. Mm-hmm. We don't want to hold on to you for the rest of your life. We just want to show you the way and let you move on from that. So that keeps us busy. And we're still trying to make sure within the Federation of St. Peter's and Nevis, we do what we can to help the athletes and just anyone who has the potential to do things, because there are a lot of scholarships available. All these embassies, consulates, there's always something available. There are scholarships available, which is UNICEF, European Union, even the IOC have scholarship or portion of certificate opportunities available. Uh-huh. So we try to help them source and find all these things. And I get a lot of calls from coaches sometimes, of course, mainly Jamaican athletes, and sometimes very few is local athletes, to help to bring the coach and athlete together so that the scholarship opportunities are available, because there's so many out there, so many opportunities, and we want to bring the people together, the coaches, the schools, the scholarship opportunities, who don't have academics, have sports, who have sports and academics. Because let me just say one thing, a lot of people don't understand athletes. They think athletes are dunce. But they don't know nothing about NCAA, where it's a student athlete. A student and an athlete, one on one. It's not 1A or 1B. If you don't pass, you don't run or compete. And if you don't compete, you don't go to school. So one can't go without the other. And I've met a lot of athletes who have gone on to done amazing things with the athletes, as well as studied some amazing things that I don't even know about. But we are not the dumbest people think.
No, not even close. It's not even close. I don't even entertain that kind of thought.
Yeah. You know,
smartest people I know have been athletes. I don't entertain that kind of thing.
One guy, I don't know who the person was, but one person was saying that, you know, us athletes should get a real job. But I'm like, dude, who's going to tell you what shoes to wear?
Yeah, no, some people disrespect athletes and athletics, and I don't understand it, because like I said, I know athletes who are engineers, who are business owners and complete highly successful in everything that they choose to do. Yeah. And I know that in my school, businesses come specifically to hire student athletes because they know that they are way better than everyone else in the workforce, just because
management, teamwork, ethics,
competitiveness, everything. They take it into the workplace and they're exceptional. So yeah. That whole athletes aren't smart. Yeah, okay.
They don't know. They don't know.
SAT was hired. Yeah, these people talk. No, athletes are. And then there's also the difference between, you know, reading a book and just reciting everything in that book. And being smart, like real intelligence, like being able to go out in the world and be successful, be able to pursue, having competence, pursuing your dreams and putting, it's way more than just book smarts.
But we know it's jealousy, because being intelligent is relative.
Yeah.
It is relative, because, I mean, I know some people who are very smart, but they will never put a light bulb in their own house.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes that is simple. So how smart are you?
Yeah, I hate those stereotypes by athletes. Athletes are very intelligent. Get out of here. But man, it was great talking to you. I took up a lot of your time, man, but it was great, you know, having you come on finally and hear from you, spit some of those gems and some of that wisdom. Is there anything else you want to leave? One last bit you want to leave with our listeners, man, who are, you know, just any piece with, so that they can go out and win their world championship, whatever that is in their life?
Well, again, my thing these days has been simple English. I've been saying this and it sounds crazy. It is not as hard as you think. Some people make it look extra hard because they're out there training like a madman. If you find the sport, you love the sport, and you say, I want to be good, I want to try the sport, I want to excel. You go on out and you find a coach who can take you where you want to go. I always tell people, start at the bottom. You go to some little joke meet, disorganized, you have to go to those disorganized meet because it helps you to appreciate what's to come. It makes a big difference.
Oh, man.
I mean, when I 2008, 9, 10, I was on a slump on one or two times. Now, when I took the course, my wife and I took the course and came back into him. I went to some meets that were really disorganized. The track was like concrete, and you work your way back up. You have to go at the start of the bottom and see how far you can climb. And honestly, wherever you stop, that's where you're supposed to be. That's the reality of life, man. I mean, you may want to go to the Olympics, but if you don't get that Olympic qualifier in 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, it's not, it wasn't for you. And you just have to accept that. I mean, it's life. I mean, you don't want to feel like you unfulfilled, because you fulfilled what you were supposed to, or what you're able to, or capable of. But you wanted something else that in reality wasn't for you, and it's no disrespect to anyone, but you fulfilled what you could. That's all it is.
I like that. No, that's great advice. I like that. You know, I always say, like, don't be afraid to do something because you're going to fail. And if you pursue that thing and you do fail, where you end up is going to be way further than where you started. So it just sounds like what you're saying, you know, pursue it. And maybe it's not for you, but where you end up is where you were supposed to be. I like that.
And someone told me this one time, I was on the radio, and he was explaining to me that if I told persons I wanted to or would become a world champion, they would discourage me. So
yeah.
When you hear people say it's very important to be careful of who you tell your dreams to, it is. They will discourage you and you believe them. And then you're going to be sitting there in the block thinking, man, I could have, I should have. Listen, life is too short to not try, man. Life is way too short to not try. Just try. Just try. You want to try baseball? Try. Football, cricket, whatever it is, just try. At least at the end of the day, say, man, listen, man. Me personally, I tried swimming. I an Olympic swimmer, a female, I almost drowned.
You don't have any body fat, man. You just sing.
It's not for me. But it was fun. Would I do that again? No, it's not. I'm not a competitive swimmer. I know that now. But my ego told me I could. And I lost.
Yeah. No, I like
it. You gotta know your limits. Just know your limits and accept that you can't be great at everything. But just find what you're good at. And if you love what you're good at, and you're good at what you love, it's a recipe for success.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I appreciate the gems, Kim. It was great having you on. Great talking to you, man.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too. And I wish you the best in everything that you're doing. And yeah, I'm sure I'm going to see you on the track scene somewhere.
Man, when all this pandemic story starts out in the next 5 years.
Bet in 5 years, shoot. Well, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, take care of yourself.
Bye, boss.